Want consistent color for every job? Milo's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Today on the Grave Talks, Haunted Youth Center. What was once a vacation retreat for the wealthy would later find itself the setting for troubled youth of the area. A building with well-meaning counselors and adults helping children and families find a positive path. What do you do when the structure being used for these meetings seems to want a different outcome for everyone? A very dark outcome. That's what we discussed today with James Copert on The Grave Talks.
We don't know too much about the history of the building. So from the context of kind of the area it's in, so within Victorian times, the Scarborough, which is the borough that this building's in, was the almost like Dubai's at the moment. It was the millionaire's playground. It was the very first holiday resort. And Queen Victoria used to come and consider the spa waters as being health beneficial. And they used to bathe in the sea. And so around kind of the town and Filey, which this building's in, was built up kind of with these Victorian and Edwardian millionaire buildings. So families like the Sitwells would have a second home there. They were really famous kind of artisans, novelists and everything. And they'd have these beautiful mansions that were just sat there for a holiday, basically. And we think that this was an Edwardian kind of holiday home by some very wealthy family. Abbey Ghost Hunters came in to do an investigation, and they did a lot of kind of research and history trying to find the kind of backstory of the building. And they think the family then, as it became less of a fashionable resort, that they kind of donated the building to a charity, and they would then bring orphans for a holiday by the seaside from the local cities. So then it got passed on, then it got passed on to the local authority, local government. And then from that point on, which has been for many years, many decades, has been used as a kind of community building, youth centre, for adult services as well. So for as many records as we can find, it's mainly been kind of in local government use.
So your interaction with the building and your work there started when, and what were you doing?
So I was an arts coordinator for CYC. So I used to organise arts projects for young people who were disadvantaged or getting in bother or just having issues in their lives or even just rural isolation.
Sure.
And I started doing the odd workshop in this building. So I wasn't working directly at this building, but used to come in, and we heard some stories. So I booked a DJ to do a workshop there with the young people, and he got there and set up early. And this was kind of the first story I heard about the building. So he was setting up upstairs, and there was only the other youth worker downstairs. And in the other room, he heard someone playing the bongos. So to give you kind of a picture of the building, so on the, we call it the ground floor, I think you guys call it the first floor in the States. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of an open room with a pool table, a kitchen, and office space. And on the first floor was kind of spaces where young people could do music and different workshops. And then on the top floor was dorms. And so he was setting up, and he heard someone playing the bongos. And he came downstairs once he set up, and the youth worker said, "Oh, did you have fun on the drums?" And he kind of said, "Well, I thought that was you." And he kind of really freaked out because, you know, to the worker who worked there all the time, this was just a normal going on. But he rang me up saying, "You didn't tell me it was haunted." I was like, "What do you mean?" And he kind of told me that story. And then my first time, I stayed over with the group doing a drama project. And one of the workers was coming in to give us health and safety talk about the fire regulations and things like that. And I saw him walk in, so I went to say hello, and there was no one there. And it was only when he kind of came in later that I heard that the door had an alarm on when anyone walked in, so that didn't go off. So this apparition that I saw was obviously just walking in the building and then just vanishing in thin air. And it was kind of after that, I had a few conversations with the current workers there, because obviously with my experience, that really built my interests up.
Yeah.
And it's, you've really got to understand who these people are. So first of all, the Yorkshire people, and people in this kind of county are known as being very kind of earthy people and quite hard talking, very kind of down to earth, serious people. But second of all, these are people who are, they're witnesses in court for, they're working with children and families in quite extreme circumstances. You know, they're quite serious professionals, you know, that are genuine witnesses in court. So when they say things, you really do believe them, especially when they say them real matter of fact.
Yeah.
And they were telling me stories such as, it was just very normal to them that it was haunted. A previous manager had actually called the church in to try and exorcise the place because she was getting freaked out by it. But the Dawn, who was one of the workers who worked there permanently, she refused to let them exercise the office. So at least there was one space that the spirits could go.
Let me ask you, because we're covering a lot of stuff, and I want to kind of to break it into pieces a bit. Let's go back to before you even set foot in the building for the first time, had you heard rumors?
Not for the first time. Because I worked in a different area.
Okay.
So I only kind of knew the building only from kind of popping in and out to do the odd workshop and booking things.
So
it was only like my first time within there I started hearing rumors.
Do you have any recollection of, you know, going into that building for the first time? Was there any recollection of how you felt yourself when you entered the building for the first time? Was there anything odd about it to you that just kind of felt off or anything like that?
Not downstairs at first, but it's quite, as someone that is, you know, clairvoyant and all the clairs, I was with loads of young people, and young people with high needs. Some were autistic, some had behavioral issues, you know, and from difficult backgrounds. So that was kind of mixed up within that. But
yeah,
when I went upstairs, I remember going up just to put my bags in our room. And I was straight away like, hello, there is something else here. So that was very palpable on the top floor within that space. But downstairs was quite difficult at first. Like when I saw that person first walk in, that surprised me because I wasn't picking anything up. But it's quite hard within that environment to kind of sense stuff at first.
And that's understandable when you're with a group of kids, and especially if you're with a group of kids with extra needs and such. There's a lot of energy going on there, and all individualized energy from every single kid, and you're trying to keep track of the living and make sure that they're all rounded up and staying safe. So it's like we kind of talked about, I think, on the other show, of like being in a shopping center. You know, do you always know if the people you are seeing in those crowds back when we did that, if are they all really there, or is there some it would be a great place for a ghost to be because they could kind of blend right in. Tell me more about that experience where you said you saw the man in the building and then realized, wait a second, the alarm for the door didn't go off. This person is no longer here. There's nowhere that they would have gone. What's going through your mind at that point?
I suppose for me, I was quite used to it within seeing those things. So yeah. I thought I was just picking something up. Although my colleague I was with, Jill, said she saw him as well. So we were both kind of like, and Jill had worked in the building before and had heard rumors. So she just kind of had a smile on her face and said, well, it's meant to be haunted.
Yeah.
But he was looking to the left as well. So there was obviously all of us in the room, which was strange. Mm-hmm. This guy was, his head was turned to the left as if he was looking in the office. I just walked straight into what I thought was the boiler room. And I say, I just went to check, and I expected to see Andy, who was the guy who was coming to give us the health and safety talk. I expected to kind of see him there. And I was like, oh, right. And just was really confused at first because he wasn't,
You thought it was the guy that was there for the health and safety talk.
Yeah,
that he was supposed to be there.
Apparition.
I mean, and when you're in a center, you know, that's focused on youth and stuff, as one of the, you know, adults, as one of the leaders there, you have to, you know, I would imagine, you know, it's the same as here in the States. You know, you keep an extra eye out for folks who shouldn't be there, especially adults who shouldn't be. They're not there to pick up a kid. They're not there for any administrative role. Why are you in the building? You know, just to keep the kids safe. So, you know, if you're expecting someone, that's one thing. But it's another when you realize, wait a second, this person really shouldn't be here, but they're also not there at the same time.
Absolutely. And I did a full search of, you know, there's within that space off that corridor, there was the boiler room. So I went in the boiler room, looked around, went in the backyard, went in the shower room that's downstairs. The office was locked, so I knew we hadn't gone in there. But, you know, we did really look around, and and I still was like, have I seen someone? And as he kind of jumped over the back, and it was only when Andy actually did come in that the door made a beep boop noise. I was like, oh, the alarm's on. So he couldn't have actually walked in. He did just appear.
Yeah. Are there, when we talk about the history of the building, so I want to talk on that for a few moments before we continue in. The history of the building, I know it's somewhat limited in terms of knowledge, but the assumption being based on what a lot of the other buildings in the area were and why they were constructed as being essentially vacation homes, happy places, and then later its transition as it was given to the city and then kind of a city building. But many times it seems it was really used as a nice getaway. It wasn't a place of shame or a place of sorrow to get to. Granted, when you were, you know, not you, but when they were bringing children there as a getaway, who were orphaned, there's probably a level there. There certainly would be a level there of just sadness with the children in general. But there, it was meant to be a positive experience for them. It was meant to be, you know, here's we're giving you something, you know, a getaway other than just the norms of the daily life and the daily routine that you go through. So it sounds like this place, correct me if I'm wrong, was really, it was a positive environment for a majority of its existence, as far as we can tell.
Yeah, definitely. There was, when Abbey Ghost Hunters went round, they did pick up some areas that were used for punishment, and there were some negative feeling within that one very small space, but on the whole, it's always been quite a positive space. But it has been a place as well where, if young people in that community had issues, that's where they'd go to talk to someone to mm-hmm. get support. And as the service developed into more within the cuts, we became more statutory. We were only working with what the government terms troubled families. Mm-hmm. So we're working with those really high need cases. So the emotion levels are high, but it is people did want to go there. It was it was a positive space, especially when it was a youth center and there was so much going on and so much fun activities. Definitely.
For a majority of the existence of the center, it was very positive. Certainly when you get into the world of troubled families are coming in, you're working with them. The intent is, of course, to help, but you're having people enter the building that are very likely surrounded by a lot of negative emotions and such. Not necessarily that they're trying to bring it, you know, to the building and leave it in the building, but obviously there's some anxiety, there's trouble, there's some issues at some points in the existence of the building and the services being rendered there. Tell me more about the structure of the building itself, and were there certain parts, certain rooms, certain areas that seemed to be a little bit more peaceful or non-existent of outside energies than others? I know you had mentioned someone eventually got so frustrated they brought an exorcist into the building to try and almost make a safe space.
Yeah, that happened the second time when kind of I got involved with the building as well. So the building itself is a very tall building. Although it's three stories, the ceilings are high, so it's a big, kind of imposing space. Mm-hmm. There was activity in the entire building. There wasn't a part of the building that was quiet, but it's the top floor where there was the most activity, and we think we know why, because we think that's where it originally kind of came in. But the, and that was also a spec, there were people that would work happily in the building, but would refuse to go on the top floor. A lot of the staff would refuse flat out to go in the top floor. And this building got to a point as well, I know this is kind of the end of the story, where staff would refuse to go in. This is like professional staff would not use the building. It was that active.
Wow. Or they just, it was just too much for them. What were some of the reasons? I mean, obviously, if you're a part of the professional staff and you're saying to your bosses, I'm not coming in here, I'm not going to use this building, you have to have some reason. You can't just be like, it makes me feel uncomfortable, the building, you know, or it's haunted. That's a pretty blanket statement, and you're relying on the others to believe in ghosts as well. What were some of the other stories that you were hearing that others were sharing that led them to say, I'm not going to use this building anymore?
I think within our team, so when I start becoming to this building really regularly, we had maybe 15 members of staff. And I think within that team, there was two people other than myself that believed in this type of thing. So the rest of them really poo-pooed it at first. By the end of that experience, I would say there wasn't anyone who disbelieved it. It was that active. If you were using that building, something would happen without any shadow of a doubt. So even the managers were experiencing things. We were even getting calls where people would ring and say, please, can someone get me? They were on their own in the building and didn't want to leave the office room and without like someone coming to support them. They were that kind of scared. Some of the stories, I mean, again, before I worked there and started talking to the previous staff there. So one of the stories was really strange, where they went into the loft. There was a load of flies, and they seemed to be coming from the loft area, the attic space above the top floor. And when they went up there, there was a load of dead birds, but in a perfect circle. Just, you know, and yeah. The guys still swear by this to this day. And Dawn, Kyle and Andy, who were the staff that were working there every single day. And I know from I've listened to some of your shows that this is a regular feature for you. But the top dorm was full of bunk beds, and and they'd had a group sleeping over there one day, mm-hmm. and they were obviously changing the sheets ready to be washed for the next group in. And they had all the doors open, and Dawn had told the other two workers, just put your hands by your side. So all of them were just stood completely still with their arms by the side. And the bedding from the four rooms off kind of the central corridor that was being thrown into the central part from four rooms. I mean, that's some power.
It's like literally taking the bedding and as they're trying to get the bedding set up, it's tossing it through the room into the central area.
Yeah. So Dawn noticed it first, and she told the other two to stop. And so all three workers were just stopped dead, and the bedding was coming from four rooms. Like I said, if you know these people just don't make stories up. You know, they're very serious people. And when Dawn says that happened, I have absolutely no doubt that happened, yeah.
Sure.
And that this is the level of kind of activity in this building.
When you have, someone who's basically locked themselves in an office and is calling out saying, hey, someone, please come get me, help me, escort me out of this building. Something like that happening with the sheets flying around or just the noises or just seeing things in general could easily make most people have that reaction of, I need someone else to come here and help me get out of this. Not necessarily because they felt threatened, but did some of the folks there feel threatened? Was there a feeling of some sort of negativity there that really made them and pushed them back to the level of, I don't feel safe here. I don't feel that I should be able to leave this, or I can leave this building on my own. Because honestly, most times when somebody's in a haunted building, they want out and they'll just get out. Locking themselves down is like a different level of fear, I would say, yeah. than just kind of your average ghost or haunting. What's your opinion on this? Do you think the energy there, the entities there, were they all good? Was there some negative? What take me down that road of what you believe resides in that building or resided or was residing in that building.
So there was a real kind of evolution as it went on. So at first, it was very much of a kind of trickster entity. And like I said to you in the email, I genuinely believe this is probably one of the most active buildings in the world. If you went in, something would happen, when I went in especially. So there was stuff that wouldn't go in the, would go in the building, but wouldn't when I was there, because it was going to happen when I was there without any shadow of a doubt. And it started off as this kind of trickster element. So it was almost like games and it was almost like a paranormal playground. So, you know, we'd, some of the staff found it pretty cool, and we'd break off and have a break, and we'd do things like I'd put someone on one of the beds and said, "Could you move the bed?" And the bed moved with someone on it. You know, that's really quite strong.
Yeah.
But there was also things like, for example, one guy was filming. We said, "Great, can you use our energy to move this ball?" And the ball shot in the air and knocked some netting from the ceiling onto the floor on command. But when we looked at the phone, he actually had it pointing at himself and had it the wrong way. And when we've tried to film it, it wouldn't happen. So there was this whole thing as well, where there was one room that continuously got rearranged. They changed the locks when we first took over the building with our new service. And I told them it won't make any difference. I said, this is like, you know, 50 feet in the air is this room, and the alarms would have had to go off in all the rest of the building to get there. They can't go in through a locked window.
Yeah.
But the whole room was being rearranged overnight, and they changed the locks, and the alarm still went off, and it occurred. And I put a field camera, so it only moves if there's movement in there, in that room. And I left it in there for a week, and the only thing it picked up was me re-entering the room to get the camera. And then the second you take it out, the room got, the beds were all unmade, you know, and it occurred again. So there's a lot of these trickster things that, and it also didn't want to be caught, but there was, we could communicate as well. But this kind of amped things up, and I was kind of told off. I was being very naive. This was before I was involved in ghost investigation and worked with, being mentored by people. I was told off by, I was giving it energy by asking it to do things and communicating and things like that. And it did evolve into something quite negative when we started challenging it. And it did actually end up with, because we were having kids in as well that were refusing to, I was having to book rooms in the school and things like that, because I had kids that wouldn't not go back in this building. So we had to get people, and when you've got staff as well, so we got this group in, and we did get rid of something, but then something even more negative took its place. And that's when some quite nasty things started occurring as well.
Do you think that the initial interacting, the initial recognizing of these things existing, and giving it some credence, it initially being almost feeling innocent, like, hey, let's play with the ghost. Can you do this? Can you do that? Did that empower this thing to evolve into something else, or to not even be something else, but enable it to become stronger?
I was told that. So Andrew Riley and Mark Riley head up Abbey Ghost Hunters, and they're absolutely brilliant. And they kind of really did warn me that's what was happening. And they, you know, they said that being able to sense things and my energy levels were giving them power anyway. But by communicating with it, it's almost giving them authority to behave how they want to behave.
Mm-hmm.
The what, you know, we were asking them to knock, to kind of answer the questions, and asking them to move things on. It was just, for me, it was really good fun at that point, you know. But then stuff just, it was like, well, actually, no, I don't want you to do it now, because I'm doing a one-to-one with a young person, and that's not appropriate. And things kept occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing pool with a young person, you know, downstairs, and a ball just dropped from the ceiling. It just appeared from thin air in the ceiling. And then as I went to pick up the ball, the curtains threw right out at me. And I walked up and down to try and recreate it, to see, was it me walking past them? And they didn't move. Another young person, I was in there, and there was a load of bangs around the room. And I just said to the young person, "Oh, don't worry, it's the room settling." just to keep his, because I didn't want them being scared or even thinking it was haunted. Mm-hmm. And then there was a massive bang, as if to say, well, no, it isn't. And then the window, the weights on the blinds started swinging in a pendulum. And I kept this guy calm and started writing. And he just screamed and rang out. And while I had my head down writing, he'd seen a figure of a woman walk into the room. So he just refused to come back in that building again.
I would imagine. Like, yeah, I mean, I would imagine, too, when you're working with kids, you know, kids talk to one another. Yeah. So I'd imagine he went back to some of his friends and stuff, too, and were like, oh, my God, I saw this in this building. Was that something you had to deal with, too, with the rumors that would fly around? And not even necessarily rumors, but just children accounting of the experiences that they had there amongst themselves.
Definitely. And there was a youth club there as well. And so I worked with this one young man, and I met him as one-to-one in the school. And he didn't even know I was part of that building, because it was actually a separate organisation and that ran the youth club. And I was just asking him what he did in his spare time. And he says, oh, we go to the youth centre. And I was like, oh, great. What do you do there? And he says, oh, we go and see Jeff. And I was trying to think of the workers. I was like, no one's called Jeff. And I said, who's Jeff? And he said, oh, Jeff the ghost. I was like, oh, right, just kind of playing dumb. And they used to go upstairs in the dorms, and they'd try and scare the girls. And they said that they went upstairs and asked them to move something, and they threw a pillow, and all the girls ran out screaming. And he said him and his mates were all stood laughing, the boys, saying, because the girls were scared.
Yeah.
But then the lockers in the rooms, the doors just started banging back and forth, and they all ran out screaming as well. So even just in general, things were just occurring, and it was amping up like frequently.
How did you manage, and you and the other adults that were there to help the youth, how did you maintain a level of calm for as long as you did there, with the youth coming in and out of this building so frequently, and knowing and them having these experiences there?
For most people that went in, it was quite little things that they could kind of play down. Like there's a bang, they'd say, oh, the cleaner's upstairs or something like that. But when I was in there, it was just another level. And there was stuff that, you know, would scare the workers as well, just when they were on their own. So even people that didn't even know it was haunted. So there was a worker coming from a different area who I was friends with on Facebook, and it just it came on where it said, I'm alone in Filey Youth Centre and someone's playing the drums upstairs. The girl that was locked in the office, she heard again the instruments upstairs were being played, and she said that it sounded like someone had dropped like a metal girder or something just on the outside of the office door. And it was me. Everyone was scared, and I said I'd go and get her. And while we're in there, the crash of metal outside that door was extraordinary. And I opened the door immediately. There was nothing on the floor, nothing moved, nothing fallen. You know, it was just amazing that the energy that was there, and the amount of things that happened. The doors would all close at once, so we're talking maybe five or six doors in a corridor would just suddenly shut.
Yeah.
And then you'd come back in and they're all suddenly open again. We had one young man came in with me, and it was almost like static was in the air, like feedback of a radio wherever he went. And again, he couldn't take it, and we had to kind of leave. It was just that it seemed as well. One of the things we spoke about last time as well is I kind of specialize with young people who had things like ADHD or autism or Tourette's and things like that. So these were kind of young people with extra energy to other young people that maybe mixing us both together really had a huge effect. Another kid I was talking to, I actually said to him, I think let's just leave now. I'm feeling a bit dizzy in here, because while I was talking to him, something was hovering behind him, and I obviously didn't point out to him, but I didn't want him to see, and we just left. So it almost got to a point where I couldn't really use the building with young people, because they wouldn't come back in.
How do you think the energy of the kids with, for example, ADHD or other conditions played a part in bringing out the energy or the spirits of the building?
I think they don't have their own energy form. So if we look at poltergeist activity, it's often related to electrical things and feeding off the energy of ourselves. I mean, if you break everyone down, you know, it's to the basic forms of atoms, and we're basically all just energy, and everything's energy in building. And I think those people that do have those extra things are just like a battery cell. They do have more. If you have ADHD, you do have more energy. So almost like a parasite, what a perfect thing to kind of leech off. Yeah. To amp up your energy if that's what you're feeding on. I think they have very limited energy within themselves, and they take the energy of quanta, which is the basic building blocks of every single thing within our understanding in the universe, isn't it? And some people have more of that than others.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with James Copert about the Haunted Youth Center. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask, how does James think the energy of the kids with various conditions played a part in bringing out the spirits in the building? How many spirits does James believe haunt the center? And who does he believe is haunting the building? What is the intent of the spirits haunting this youth center? And why does James believe that dark forces in the building were simply restricted to that building alone? All of that and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You can do that by signing up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or by visiting thegravetalks.com and clicking Become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll get the second half of this interview along with part two to all of our interviews, hundreds of them to binge away on in their entirety. Your support is what keeps this program on the air. Without it, we would not exist. So thank you for considering becoming a Gravekeeper. And if you already are, thank you very much. You are what keeps this program on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.